everybody. This is Bits. Before we get into our incredible interview with Sarah Bradley today, we're going to kick things off with a very quick recap of this week's Last Chance Kitchen. Okay, let's go.
I'm ready. So right off of their double elimination, we've got Kat and Corwin battling it out. Their challenge is they have to start making a dish, but they do not know what their protein is going to be. And at, was it 20 minutes of their 30, they were going to be told what their mystery protein is.
After 10 minutes.
Oh, sorry, after 10 minutes.
So they had 10 minutes to meze, yeah.
So I liked this challenge. I liked the format of it. We've seen flavors of it before, but I think it's perfect for Last Chance Kitchen. And we see the two chefs taking very different approaches.
One thought I had before we get into the food is I think that this is just Last Chance Kitchen now. I think Last Chance Kitchen is just sort of a cuckoo bananas prompt. Like, that is what this show is about now.
I think you it's always been that way in Last Chance Kitchen.
Yes and no. I think that they're like ratcheting up the sort of like complexity of the okay, in the first 10 and then after this. And like, it didn't feel like it had so many layers of just crazy. It felt like you have 20 minutes and you can use one thing and like go. There seems to be several kind of each challenge seems like it has to outdo itself within the challenge itself, like every episode now. Like, it has to like be more complicated. But I completely agree. I really liked this challenge. And like you said, we see Kat come out. Okay. Mystery protein spoiled. It is salt cod, which I'm going to.
How did they not see that coming?
Well, I didn't see it coming.
Really?
I was just going to say. No, it just didn't even occur to me. I don't think I really pondered, like, wonder what it'll be, but it did not. And it's so obvious. Yeah, like.
Yeah, I also wonder when they filmed, when they started filming this Last Chance Kitchen. Like, it may have been a few days later. It may have been a week later. We don't know. And so perhaps, like, the association wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, Corwin seemed to think
he was ready.
He kind of knew, yeah.
So Corwin's approach is he's going to make a green curry because essentially, like, any protein can go into a curry. Which is great. Kat's approach is to make a salad because you can throw any protein on a salad. I think both of these were very clever approaches.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was super smart. I think the thing that was obviously the most entertaining here is that we have this oh shit moment with Corwin where he realizes he actually didn't even open his can of...
Oh yes, it's an important thing to note is they were their knives were taken away from them at the 10-minute mark.
Yeah.
So it was no more prep and just cooking.
Yep. So he had a can that was not open. It was the it was like curry. It was green curry, I think. So yeah, that was tough. And
that was.
Not surprisingly, Kat takes it. Kat wins.
Yeah, she ends up making what looks like a delicious salad. I'm a big, big salad.
Love panzanella too.
Panzanella I like a classic pan.
God tier.
If I'm being honest, like, I don't need it to be fancy. I just want some tomatoes, bread. Yeah. I do put a little sesame oil in my panzanella.
That's nice. It gives it a nuttiness.
Yeah. But other than that, panzanella is delicious. But what I was going to say is Kat is talking to the camera a bit about, like, everyone underestimates a salad. But you know who has a salad to thank for their Top Chef career? Brooke Williamson.
So true.
So
call back.
We do not look down on the humble salad in this household.
We put it in our mouths.
Yes, we all yum, 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 and we chomp, 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 chomp on that lettuce. I also love an iceberg lettuce, so sue me.
Mm-hmm.
I know it has zero nutritional value.
Talk to my lawyer.
Yeah. I wish I had a lawyer. That'd be cool.
But you're a notary. It's okay.
I am a notary. Anyone listening, if you're in the state of New York and need a notary, please let me know. Anyway,
we're off to the races.
Back to the races.
Back half of this Last Chance Kitch.
So excited to see how things go. If we'll have two more mid-season finales, we'll find out. But until then, enjoy our interview with the one, the only, Sarah Bradley. Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. For this week's second helping, we have such an exciting guest joining us on the pod. Bits, how excited are you?
On a scale of 1 to 10, 20.
20. Well, I don't want to belabor it any longer, but ladies and gentlemen, this week on the pod, we have someone who cooks with her deep roots in the South. You might know her as a Super 8 finalist on this season of Tournament of Champions. We haven't seen the rest of the season, so we don't know how far you get. You also probably know her, if you're listening to our podcast, as a two-time finalist on Top Chef, both Top Chef Kentucky and World All-Stars, the most epic season of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the pod, Sarah Bradley.
Oh, and the crowd goes wild. Hello, I'm so excited to be here, you guys.
We are so excited to have you. Something that we need to share before we begin anything, and I know that we told you right before this that we are huge fans of yours, but you need to know what large fans of yours we are. When okay. Bits and I started talking about doing this podcast on January 23rd, 2024. Initially, this podcast was called Yes Chef, which is funny because I hear there's a new show coming out called Yes Chef. But we wrote like the goals that we wanted to manifest. And the number one goal we wanted to manifest was having you on the podcast.
I will take that.
Wrong spelling and all.
Yeah, we sorry, we put the H. I'm so sorry.
You know, I feel like I'm a true believer. Like, you have to put it out in the universe to like.
Yes.
You have to write it down and say it, and, you know, it'll happen.
And we are so excited. And I will stop talking. I'm going to let Bits dive into some of the things that we want to talk to you about because we are just sort of chomping at the bit.
We're yappers. Yeah, we're yappers. Right. Well, Sarah, it's so good to have you here. I think we love to start really at the beginning with all of our guests. And I think, you know, you have such an illustrated career so far, especially like in front of the camera in Paducah. When you look back in your early years, whether that's childhood or as a teenager or whenever that was there ever a moment that you just thought, this is it, I'm going to be a chef? Or did it unfold for you in a more gradual way?
So I've always like, the food has always been a huge thing. It's always a, you know, in my mother's family, which, you know, the Jewish side, my father's family, the Appalachia side, it was always like a huge thing. And I always liked to cook and I really loved to eat. So like, I always loved it. I just never really thought it was like this thing that you could do. And celebrity chefing was not big. You know, I'm 43. Like, I remember when Food Network started and it was like just a few people. But I think, so, you know, I graduated from University of Kentucky, and while I was there, I kept finding these jobs in restaurants because I liked the camaraderie of it. I liked the going out afterwards and part, like, I liked all the things about it. And my brother worked at this restaurant, which I will not name, and I was like, Joe, I really want to work in the kitchen. And he was like, okay, let me talk to the chef and, you know, let me ask. And so they let me come in one day. And I remember like loving this bread that they made and realizing that it was like frozen bread that they like threw into the oven. And I thought like into the wood fire oven. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. And then like after the day was over, I was like, so do you think I can like get some shifts or something? Can I come back? And he was like, you know, I just don't know like if the back of the house is where you need to be. And I think it's like, I don't like being told, I don't mind being told what to do. I don't like being told like someone thinks I can't do it. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at that moment I was like, well, why not? Like, why can't I be in the back of the house? And I didn't like what I was going to school for anyway. So I just, that's like a pivotal moment. I remember like being in their kitchen and being like, who are you to tell me that you're cooking frozen bread and like passing it off as your own? So
I know your secrets.
Yeah.
I've seen your bread. Yeah. I feel like it's interesting because people in those circumstances can go one of two ways. Like, you hear that and it can sort of like irreparably shape the way you see yourself too and say like, damn, maybe I can't be back of house. So hell yeah for thinking the opposite. We're very glad you did. And obviously, like, Paducah is really central to your story as a chef. And how does it continue to shape how you see food and how you see hospitality?
you know, Freight House, which hopefully will get you ladies here.
Next year in Paducah.
All right, next year. You know, this whole thing. Like, I knew I wanted a restaurant. I couldn't really figure out, you know, that you're like writing these fake menus and you're trying to like wrap everything in your head around it. Once we found this space, I knew exactly what the restaurant would be. And this restaurant, like my business plan, my fake schedules, my fake wish list, or not fake, I guess, my wish list of every piece of equipment, every plate, all of those, that happened after I'd already moved home to Paducah and found the space, and we got snowed in, like 16 inches of snow in Paducah. And I just sat there for days and like worked on it. And one thing that I like remember telling my father is, he's like, well, what kind of food is it? I was like, you're going to wish that Gimper, who is, we called his mother, Gimper. So you're going to wish Gimper could have cooked food like this. Like, it's going to have all of those things that make you feel like you're sitting down at the table, like with your people, but it's going to be like super technique driven and like, a, you know, not crazy elevated, but a little bit. And so, yeah, I remember thinking like, that's what I want. I want that like community feeling. I want big, huge plates of food that you can share with everyone. And I really was, I think that was the driving thing. I was like, I want people to be like, damn it, if my grandmother could have cooked beets like this, I would have loved them, because, you know, we're going to use this like amazing technique to cook beets, and that's going to be it. So, and it really has played out like that. This is definitely a restaurant that focuses on community and family. So
that's beautiful. I have like a very side question based on what you just said at the end there, which I think about this a lot now at the stage of life that I'm in, where there's food you're introduced to as a child or a kid in a particular preparation, like in your case, beets, that it takes you then years to come back to, because it just feels like something that's now like, I have closed the door on this. I feel like you can only have beets in this way. Are there other foods that jump out to you like that?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I think growing up, my mother liked a rare steak. My father liked, you know, a well-done steak. Now my father likes, you know, he's come around. He's tasted what it should be. You know, I think I really can't, when I think back, I can't really think of many foods that I didn't like or things that I wouldn't eat. I'm struggling right now to think of something that I didn't like. Maybe it's because everything I ate was always seasoned. Like, my mother knows how to season food. And I think sometimes that can really be like a turn off. I can't really think of many things that my daughters don't eat. My daughter, the oldest one, wants, not only does she want a rare steak, but she doesn't want to see any of the cooked parts of the steak. She just wants like the raw middle.
Hardcore. I dig it.
Yeah. So she's 5.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
wow.
That's like the opposite. Actually, no, it's not. It's the same thing kids have where they're like, can you cut the crust off?
She does not want, she doesn't want any of the crust, but I think that part is like delicious, you know? So I don't mind. It's like, we call the parent tax. It's fine.
That is so good. I feel like you have a nice business, like Smucker's Uncrustables, but like Steak Uncrustables.
It's just like delicious.
I guess it's just raw meat at that point. Yeah. But so, okay. That's a really interesting story. First off, I guess I'm naive. I didn't realize that it snowed 16 inches in Kentucky all the time.
Not all the time.
Okay.
We do get snow, but 16 inches is like, you know, apocalyptic here. But 3 inches is also like shuts everything down for a week, you know.
One snow truck. Yeah.
These days it's sort of like that in New York too. But I was going to say, like, you know, that is clearly a very salient memory of opening up your restaurant. I'm curious, on the flip side, were there any moments in opening up your own restaurant where you sort of felt completely out of your depth, or just like the world is on fire and what do I do?
You know, I am very lucky. My father was an attorney. He owned his own law firm for years. You know, I took business classes in school. Like, I had worked in restaurants. I had helped people open restaurants. I had been this chef and the sous chef and the this and the that. Never in my life had I ever had to pay a tax other than the one that you just like file your taxes at the end of the year. You know, you like, get the free TurboTax and you do it. So when it first came to like the ins and outs of business, and I love numbers, but like the things that happen that you never really realize happen, like putting a journal entry into QuickBooks, like all of those things that were the behind the scenes part of being a chef that you don't really know until you are the chef. I remember being like totally overwhelmed by that, but it was great because I had a father that could help me like navigate those. And my father mm-hmm. still comes down here. He was down here this morning. He still comes down and he wants to like look at the books and check it all out. You know, he and I'm thankful for it. So yeah.
I love that taxes is like the one thing that really,
well,
and
you know what?
Happy tax season.
Yeah.
It is, we are there.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, they don't like, you don't know that. Like, even in like culinary school, you know, I took a class. It was like the culinary business class. And they're like teaching you how to cost out recipes and teaching you about, you know, your labor cost should be this much and your food cost should be this much and all of these things. And you have all this overhead. And these are the things that are your overhead. But I swear to God, they never said anything about taxes. They never were like, and these are the taxes. And as a small business owner, you have to pay this. And if you're like, yeah, no clue. And so that was a lot. And that, I mean, still, we've been open 10 years. Still, sometimes I'm like, what? Like,
what's this number?
Yeah. Like, oh, I have to file an annual report. Like, it's all those little things that you just exist without you knowing anything about them. So
it's almost like the government doesn't want us to know how to pay our taxes.
Listen. The final level.
I called my congressman the other day. I could not get on the Kentucky Department of Revenue website. I called and I left a message and I said, I just want to pay my taxes. Somebody figure this out. Kentucky was having like a meltdown on their tax thing. And I was like, somebody figure it out. Call me back. I just want to pay my taxes.
Like, you're probably the first person that's ever called in like, please let me pay my taxes. I want to pay.
I'm a pretty honest. I'm like pretty honest, pretty like straight laced with it, you know.
Yeah.
Love that.
Afraid of getting in trouble. I get it. Although you did famously on World All-Stars make some joke about like, I think it was like getting high in like the car during soccer practice, which was so cool. And which also brings us, you know, we are not a tax and financial advisory podcast. In fact, if you take any financial advice from any of us, you are about to be insolvent very quickly. But we are a Top Chef podcast.
Yes.
And you are to us on the Mount Rushmore of Top Chef contestants. And so we'd love to talk to you if you'll indulge us a little bit about your time on the show and just your experience and sort of what it's brought into your life. So the first thing we always like to ask is, how did you come to Top Chef, or how did Top Chef come to you?
So I never thought I would do anything cooking, culinary, competition related at all. I was very content like running my restaurant, living in Paducah, you know, I was getting married. I was doing all the things and I was super happy about that. But my mom is like getting her hair cut one day and some woman calls her on her phone and is like, I'm desperately trying to get in touch with your daughter. Somebody gave me your number, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, who is this? And they were like, she was like, I'm the tourism commissioner for the state of Kentucky. And unbeknownst to us, Top Chef was coming to Kentucky and they were looking, you know, they were looking for people around Kentucky that they wanted, like chefs that they wanted to put up. So it all starts to work out. And I tell my parents, I'm like, I don't want to do this. My mother told me it was my civic duty to do Top Chef. And she was like, think of everything good you can do with this. Like, you're so community oriented. Think of all the good you can do. And I just decided, okay, I'm going to go through the interview process all the way to the end, but I'm probably not going to do it. And then they called and they were like, so you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, why not? You know, like, I'll just do it. A funny part is they always want you to send in. So you have to like send in an application and like, you have to send in a video of like you cooking and you're like showing, you know, how you are on the camera. And so they're like, can you send that in? And I was like, actually, I'm so sorry. I really wasn't gung-ho about it yet. I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't think I can. Like, I'm going to New York to cook at the James Beard House in a couple of days. And I just don't have time to make you guys a video. And they were like, oh, really? And I was like, but you can, I was like, but they stream the cook from James Beard's kitchen. I was like, so you can just log on there and watch me for hours. And that's what they did. They just logged on and watched me. And I think that was cool because they got to just see me in my element. They didn't get this like, you know, like, what I wanted to present about myself. They just got to see me being me. So, yeah.
Oh my God. That is incredibly fortuitous timing.
Yes. Playing hard to get. It works almost every time.
I know.
I'll be with Mr. James Beard. That is wild. Okay. So, and this is interesting because I think you're the first person that we've spoken to who was repping the home region of the season. So yeah. That was particularly interesting because I don't even think we've heard about it from the angle of like, hey, we want to make sure we have representation of the people that are actually chefs here. So super cool. What was it like just showing up the first day? Like you're getting a glimpse at the rest of the competitors and getting a feel for how they cook. Are you just like totally freaked out or you're like, let's see how this goes?
So first day you show up and you immediately like go to your hotel room and you just hang out. You get your cell phone, you know, you can watch TV, you can do all that stuff, but you like, do not leave your hotel room. They, you know, a couple of days, because it takes everybody, you know, for me, I just like got in a car. They picked me up and I'm, you know, in a car and drove me up to Louisville. It was like, you know, it's like 3.5 hours, but other people are like flying from all over the country. And so, you know, it takes a while to get you there and they don't want to expose anybody. They don't want you to know who you're competing against. And I remember one of my windows, like where my hotel room was, I could kind of see like the underpass of like where people were getting out of their cars. And I remember I saw Eric Ajapong get out of his car. I had no clue who he was at the time. I just knew that he brought a lot of luggage. And, but I assumed because I saw his knife roll, I was like, oh, I'm going to be going against that guy. But how can you even like, you know, how do you even like figure out who that is? But I would just sit there at the window and like watch.
I love that visual.
Yeah. I mean, and there was, you know, so the first day showing up, it was stressful. I mean, because then you also are like, it's just like the waiting game. It's like waiting. But when we actually saw everybody, I knew immediately who Kelsey was. Like we weren't supposed to talk to anybody, you know, and I saw her and I like saw that blonde hair and those cowboy boots. And I was like, oh, that's my girl, Kelsey. Like I knew right away. So
you guys worked together briefly, right?
Yeah, we worked together in New York at Dovetail over on 77th in Columbus, which is no longer there, but a fabulous restaurant. Yeah, the day she showed up to like, I don't know if it was her stage. I think maybe her stage. She like came in and she walked into the kitchen. Hey, y'all. And they were like, Sarah, you two go, you go show her around, get her all set up. And I was like, so excited. You know, I was like pumped. And we were really close. We were really, you know, really close for a long time. So
the camaraderie between the contestants and sub is something that we always talk about. And some seasons are really have a lot of charisma. Other seasons, it seems like they don't gel, but your Kentucky season really felt like you guys cared for each other in a really deep way.
Yeah. I think, you know, they put us all in this like huge mansion on a hill. I also think there were some things that like, you know, happened on our season that they never like sadly, like Anthony Bourdain, you know, taking his own life, like that happened while we were on, like while we were in lockdown, you know, like we didn't know. And Padma came in and told us like, you know, they got us all together. I think that also, I think Kentucky just breeds like, you know, love and bourbon and hanging out and having a good time. And we all just got really close and we all have remained really close. Like we still have a text message. Some of us are going to a birthday party who I won't spoil whose birthday party is. We're all showing up as a surprise. Like a lot of stuff's happening and we've all remained really close. So
is there a moment in all that that really sticks out with you for better, for worse, that you just take with you from that season?
I think for me, if I wasn't going to win Top Chef, like Eric was great, but if I wasn't going to win, I 100% wanted Kelsey to win, you know, like, and I think that she probably felt the same way. And that probably was a catalyst that pushed us to both like be really supportive. Like we're tasting each other's food, you know, we're talking to each other about our dishes. You know, I think you take away from that, like, you know, you don't have to, you know, you just can't be a sore loser. Maybe you're not the best, yeah. You know, you can't always win at everything, but just don't be a sore loser. And, you know, second place is not that bad. You know, like even in the grand scheme of things, you know, I have to say that twice now and be like, oh, second place is not that bad. Oh, second place is not that bad again. But yeah, I think from taking away from Top Chef is that, yeah, you know, it's cool. It's just this like rare experience. And so you have to take it for all it's worth.
100%. And you got to have that rare experience twice, like you mentioned, on World All-Stars. What sticks out to you for that season? Like, are you a different Sarah when you walk in that kitchen? Did you bring the same playbook? How'd you approach it?
1,000% a different person. You know, I have some people that have worked in the restaurant since like the day we opened, like our beverage director, the sous chef, they've all been here for 10 years. And, like we can laugh about the person I was 10 years ago and the person I am today. A big part of that was having children. I mean, you have to have more patience and you have to have more compassion. Like, you know, years ago, I remember I would never have called out of work. And when people would call out from work, I'd be like, what do they mean they can't find a babysitter? Like find a babysitter. And now it's like, oh, they can't find a babysitter. Like, what do we have to do to like, how can we support them as a team member? So I think I changed a lot. I also, for Kentucky, I like memorized all these recipes and like came up with all these ideas for like things that I thought would be challenges. This, for the second time for Top Chef, I went in like totally blind. I had like I had a couple dessert face recipes. I had my mom's pea cake memorized because I'm like, I'm going to London, like mushy peas, you know, but I didn't like get in there and like make all these crazy lists about things. I just tried to embrace the challenge, you know, and always make sure that there was like a touch of me in the dish.
So. That's beautiful.
I love that. That's actually a perfect segue to a question that I personally have been really interested in asking you. I am a New York Jew, as all pod listeners have figured out by now. You are one of the more vocal and visible Jewish chefs in the Top Chef universe, and you really talk about it a lot. And I just want to know how that factors into your cooking just as a chef in your regular professional life and the decision to bring that into Top Chef.
You know, a long time ago. So I went to this like reform Jewish camp. There aren't a ton of Jews around here, you know, in Southern Illinois growing up. And I think some of my best friends still to this day are ones that I went to that summer camp with. And very early on, I realized that if you have something that's a little bit different about you, you can either embrace it or you can just like let it be something that's different and not really talk about it. So I have always been very proud that I have that difference than everybody else. Like it was always something that was very cool. You know, I was the only one, like the only kid that a ton of people from Paducah have never been to another bat mitzvah. You know, like I just decided to embrace it. And I've carried that along with me, my whole life. It's sometimes I think being Jewish is more than about the religion. It's literally like a cultural identity. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And I just, you know, I also think that it's fun because maybe not everybody expects some of the things that I do for somebody from Kentucky. Mm-hmm. You know, they've all got their preconceived notion and they're like, oh wait, here's this very educated, lots of degrees girl who is a Jew who, you know, does all these things and it's a little bit different. So, yeah, I like it. And then, you know, we need more.
Well, I appreciate it really. Like it has been so cool hearing you talk about your story and just bring that in because there have obviously been Jews on Top Chef before and there are many Jewish chefs and food is so important to us. But really from the bottom of my heart, I really have just loved hearing you talk about like those experiences as part of your time on the show. Yeah. So it's great.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think, I think I was the only Jewish person on both of my seasons. I mean, I'm
probably,
yeah, I'm about 1,000% sure. So, you know,
yeah. I'll go with that confidence. Well, so obviously we would be remiss if we did not ask about your guest judging this week on the latest ep. What was that like?
Oh my God.
Back.
It was so much fun. It is so nice. You know, I did like a kind of like a cameo guest thing. For the first fish boil. Yeah, the fish boil.
That's right.
But this one was like totally different. I was like, I think when they called and they were like, do you want to be a judge on Top Chef? And like my agent called, they're like, we're going to get you, you're going to be a judge. And I was like, okay. Until literally when I tasted all the food, I'd been to the thing, and then we get there and they're like putting me behind the table. And I was like, wait, I get to be like behind the table. And Kristen was like, yeah, you're a judge. And I was like, I don't know. I guess I just thought like, you guys would take my input, and then, you know, sometimes they'll get people's input, but then they're not like actually at the table.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think the whole time I thought I was that person. And then I was like, wait, like I'm like, I get to tell the person that they won. Like it was you know, like almost like you're up in the corner and you're like watching it all happen. But I also really missed being on the other side. Like I really missed the competitive, like I kept thinking like, oh, this is what I would have done. Like, this is how, like,
yeah.
Oh, like that, they did that wrong. Not that they did that wrong, but I remember like on somebody's station, like seeing something like sitting out at room temperature, but they had like a cooler full of ice. And I was like, put it in the ice. What are you doing? So, yeah.
Oh my God.
I'll go back and judge anytime they want me.
Yum. Oh, well, I definitely want to dig in on the Tournament of Champions bit, but the follow-up to this is we're always so curious, especially when there's this many chefs in the competition. What is it actually like eating that many bites of food? Like, are you pacing yourself? Like, how do you even, like, approach that where you're like, okay, I got to be able to taste everything I'm about to eat?
No, I had no pacing me. Like, I'll tell you, Kristen Kish is a fabulous – Padma was a good eater. Kristen Kish is, like – that is some, she can seriously put it down. Like after all that stuff and we ate all that food, she was like, who wants Wendy's? I was like, spicy chicken sandwiches. And she bought like spicy chicken sandwiches for the whole crew. She's so fabulous. But no, because there were some bites that were definitely more delicious than others. But I really like, I knew what it was like to serve someone and then watch them take like one bite and be like, So I was like, yeah. I'm going to eat all the food. Like I'm going to do it. Whatever, I can, like, you know, like I can eat all this food. So I did not pace myself at all.
Hell yeah. Okay, well, I hope we would do the same if it were us. Well, let's switch gears because Tournament of Champions is super fun. I watched your latest challenge. You are now moving on to the Super 8. Did I get that correct?
Yes.
How is that experience comparatively? Because it seems like super high stakes, super fast. A little bit of a different flavor from Top Chef, and I'm curious how that feels as the chef in the room from a competition perspective.
I think so. I love to like talk about kind of like the game theory of things.
Yeah.
So Top Chef, it is the story. Like you have to be able to connect your food to your story and then convey it, and you want them to eat it and like taste what you're talking about, you know. Tournament of Champions, none of that. Blind tasting. It doesn't matter what your story is. There's absolutely no reason to cook your story because it doesn't matter. So like I didn't have to cook like Jewish food or Southern food or Midwestern or Appalachia or whatever. I could just cook whatever I wanted. You know, that's like kind of the switch back and forth. Top Chef takes 3 months to film. Tournament of Champions, 2 weeks, you know, like,
wow. Yeah.
So you're not, it's not as much of like a mind game. Top Chef, you get no cell phone, no watch. You're like in a hotel room. You have to ask for everything. Tournament of Champions. We were out drinking wine. We like went to eat at Bouchon. I think we were just like all over the place. We were swimming in the pool one day, a bunch of the chefs, when it got down to just the 8 chefs left.
Yeah.
We all like cooked dinner one night, like on the grill in the back of the hotel. So, very different, but, I enjoy them all. So,
well, and the thing that seems interesting about Tournament of Champions is that you're now cooking against people, like one-on-one people that you know, both professionally, personally. Does that shape the way that you approach a challenge, or do you have in the back of your head, like, you know, as we move into this next challenge, like, I think I know what Nini's going to do here, so I'm going to do this.
Ooh. No, I mean, I think that, like, you can't be concerned with like what's, you honestly don't even have enough time to like look over. You know, I think David, like last time David was like, I'm going to do a duo. And I like heard it out of my head and I was like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you know better than that. Don't do that.
Yeah, I know.
Come on.
Like the, not the blah, 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 two ways. Yeah. We joke on that about that on this podcast too. Cause it's like, no, don't do onions three ways.
Like just don't do it. Well, I think you can do onions three ways, but you can't have the like, one onion is this dish and one onion is like this, you know, you can like, cause like I actually embraced that. Like I was like, okay, I'm going to take, you know, like what was the first one? Like, oh, well actually that was probably something I learned from the first cook on Tournament of Champions. I tried to make everything taste like horseradish and turnip. And I should have made some things taste like turnip and some things taste like horseradish and, you know, and make them like much more extreme. Mm-hmm. So that's like what I kind of did on this next one. I made these like braised dandelion greens and this dandelion gremolata. And I made like, you know, all this stuff. I hated that one judge. I don't remember who it was. It was like, I didn't hate him. I just hated his comment. I think it was Zimmern. And he's like such a nice man. He was like, you know, I really wish he had used the randomizer, like the meat grinder in a different way. And I was like, but that's the trick to it is that you don't have to use the meat grinder. Just because it's a meat grinder, there's no reason that you have to use it as a meat grinder.
Right, right.
So.
Totally.
Whatever, Andrew.
Whatever. So what do you know anyway?
Yeah.
So I'm really curious about cooking competition TV in general. You said like when Top Chef came to you, essentially, which is like the coolest casting story we've ever heard that they called your mom. But you weren't necessarily like that. You didn't see that as part of your career. Now you've done Top Chef twice. You've gone on to Tournament of Champions. What role do you think cooking television has taken on in your career? And do you think that it, what do you think it adds to the culinary industry in general?
So I think for my career, and I'm not trying to be like, oh, Sarah, good job. But, you know, I did this thing called like Chopped Legends and it was the first time they'd ever done it. And, you know, I beat Hosea, who's also Top Chef. I beat him the first time when I did like Chopped Champions. And then I beat him again the second time. Like he now has to say like second place isn't that bad. And at that moment, it was like, you know, I was talking to Scott Condon in the back and I was like asking him, like, do you think they'll let me like give my money to him? We had to do 25 to us and 25 to a charity. I was like, do you think they'll let me like give my, like, you know, my charity to him, like switch my charity? Cause I can do something for the place in my community. Like anytime I can have a dinner, I can do whatever. But like for him, and he was like, I don't know, we'll check and we'll ask the producers. And they said I could. And I think that you have to realize that people are watching and you have to be like the bigger and better person. Like, yeah, I could have taken the $25 and given it to the, you know, art house cinema that I support a lot in my community. But I also could give it to Hosea and he could use it for his daughter's foundation. And, I think that you, when you do these competitions, when you do these TV shows and you have people, you have to really exemplify the idea of leading by example. Mm. Like, you know, you have to recognize that there are more eyes on you. And so, you have to do better, but also there are more eyes on you. So by doing better, you can, more people can see, you know, they can be exposed to it. So, like the Duchess of Paducah on Tournament of Champions, going back to my mother telling me it's my civic duty. We are a town that is heavily based on tourism. So when they're like, what do you want your nickname to be? I was like, Duchess of Paducah. They were like, what? Guy could barely say the word Paducah. And he was like, Duchess of Paducah. And they were like, why? And I was like, I want them to say the name of my town as many times as possible on TV because it's good for me and it's good for everyone else. It's good for the people that have boutique hotels and own gas stations and other restaurants and all of those things. So you have to like, you have to do what's good for everyone because people are watching and I like that. I mean, I like that. It's not that I wouldn't be good if people weren't watching, but I like that, you know, you can change. You're not just another cog in the wheel. You know, you can actually affect change. So
yeah, using your platform 100%. And I know the second part of Nancy's question maybe got buried too, but what, when you look at the industry, whether that is, you know, food television, food competition television, or just the industry generally, what is it, what's exciting you right now? What are you paying attention to?
What is exciting me? I think one of the things I love about like the culinary, if we're talking about competition cooking, I love that people are breaking away from like the standard reality TV show of what I think Top Chef was. And Top Chef is also now doing it a little bit. I think it's like coming up with more interesting ways. Not everything has to be that, like, you know, I mean, Tournament of Champions, no one had done a show like that before. And then this, have you guys seen 24 yet?
No.
Oh my God. So cool. I want to be on it next season. It's
oh, nice.
24 chefs start 24 hours straight. They film the whole thing in 24 hours. And oh, every gosh. Hour someone is eliminated. Boom, 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 boom. All the way down to the end. So I think that, like, that's what I like, is that there now are these different outlets for us to show our creativity if we want to do it. And so that's what I'm really liking in this competition world. In the just food world itself, I love that. So I got nominated for a James Beard this
Congratulations.
Year. After 10 years and of the restaurant being open. And it was a huge ordeal. It was like a huge for... It was huge for me, for my crew, for my staff. They don't know yet. I'm telling them later, but I'm taking like my whole executive team with me to Chicago. Yeah, I'm going to tell them they have to come back to Tuesday. They have to drive back from Chicago on Tuesday and work. But, but like there were so many more rural communities on the list this year than there have been in the past. And I am loving that people are seeing, you don't have to just be in a big city to like do something really nice. You can go out and then come home and do something beautiful. And so that is what I'm loving right now. It's hard to live in a big city, you know, like.
Don't I know it. Nancy and I got dinner this week and we have like not shut up about just like, just the frustration of it.
It was a stupid dinner.
It was a stupid dinner.
It was expensive. It was small plates. It was like lots of weird tinned fish.
Yeah.
We were hungry. But yeah.
I will say that your like commitment to where you're from and like your roots is something that, especially on World All-Stars, really came through. And I don't want to talk at you about you, but it was so cool to see that even in the glitz and glamour of Paris and London and among all these chefs, it's not like you said, well, I'm just this small town girl. Like that wasn't your persona, but you were essentially saying what I bring to the table is just as valid as what you bring to the table. Mm-hmm, and it is such a refreshing perspective to see on Top Chef, which, you know, is very prestigious and tends to favor people with in very, not normal, but very small conventional circles.
Conventional,
careers.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, you know, I would love. I'm like, you know, whenever Kelsey won, I thought, well, it's going to be a woman from the South, and you know, I think she was the first person who owned like a catering company that had ever won. And you know, like, and then also Eric owned a catering company, so like, you know, it's. I love whenever they step away from the expectations of what everyone has. I love that that's happening. I'm also loving, like, I've seen all these things, like I've been like following, there's all these really cool restaurants right now in France that are serving Southern food.
Whoa.
That's like a hip thing in like in Europe right now, is to eat like Southern food, like hot chicken and peas and greens and cornbread. And I'm like, and it's just so cool to see. It's a lot of fun.
That's incredible. Well, that was like, I mean, fried chicken is like so big in South Korea too. It's just like, it's incredible to see that just travel the world. Well, so you've done a lot. You've been on all of these shows. You're James Beard nominated. You have your own restaurant. Is there anything that you still want to do? Like what's on the horizon for you?
Well, so I'm actually doing both of them. So I really want to create another space. I want to have another business. Not so much for me, partially for me, but I have these like people that I work with that I love, like they're my family. Like I've been with them and I have run out of room to promote people. And so I am creating another space next door. My husband and I were able to buy our building after 10 years. And so we're creating another space because I want to be able to bring more people up. I want to be able to hire more people. I want to be able, I love education and teaching and I want to be able to like teach more people and I want to have a space where I can teach classes. And so we're doing all that. And then also in 2026, my first cookbook will come out.
Yay.
We will be your first buyers. We love cookbooks.
We just finished the manuscript. Like? Yeah, we just finished the manuscript. Actually finished it like a month early, which was crazy.
Unheard of.
Yes. Also 10,000 words over what we were supposed to. So we're going to have to adjust that a little bit. But I scheduled the photo shoot. I wanted it to happen in Paducah. I wanted the photography to take place here. And so scheduled it and it was like this date to this date. And then I got nominated like a semifinalist for James Beard. And I was like, this is so amazing. And my mother called me. She's like, you realize that's when you booked your photo, like your photography. We'd already signed contracts. We'd already started the planning. I was like, well, it's like, I mean, what's the likelihood that I actually get finalist? Like, we'll know in April, like, you know, if I'm going to have to leave. And then I got finalist. And I was like, oh, my God. So right in the middle of the cookbook shoot, I am leaving to go to Chicago because, you know, because
you have to.
Yeah, that's what you do. So I'm leaving to go to Chicago. And so my folks, my husband, the team here, we're going to go. We're looking for someplace. I want to go someplace really delicious to eat. But normally I'd want to take like a whole week. I'd want to make a week of it.
Yeah, right.
I like to party. I like to hang out. And we're going to like drive up Sunday afternoon. We're going to drive back Tuesday morning. We're going to get like one day in. That'll be okay though.
Wow. But how beautiful and sort of poetic that the reason why you can't necessarily experience the full bounty of this lifetime achievement is because this other thing that perhaps – you didn't know it was even going to be on the horizon is already like, you've almost like you keep eclipsing the things that you want to do and accomplish. And it's so cool.
In the same day.
I know. I'm going to have to like figure out something to do next. Maybe.
Got to keep upping the ante. Well, I, for one, have definitely enjoyed your cooking demonstrations. The rack of lamb. As a Greek girl, I need to learn how to break down a lamb. So that's on my list of learning, but that's going to be really cool to see that happen in like a cooking or instructional capacity in the new space. That's great.
Congratulations. Well, is there anything else that you want to share or tease or promote? Of course, you have incredible accomplishments on the horizon, but anything now that the people at home can do to support or find you?
No, I mean, just, you know, we're living in a crazy time right now, you know, support your restaurants, the local ones. If you want to see them around, you got to go out and like, you know, you got to make sure butts in seats. You got to come and see us. Mm-hmm. I do have some more TV shows one that I've filmed and a few more that are already being filmed. So those are fun.
Exciting.
I'm going to just keep doing that and just remind everyone to be kind to each other. We just need some kindness. And season your fucking food. Season your food. Okay. You need salt. You need acid. That's what's the problem. Everybody, like, salt and acid. Taste it before you give it to people and put some salt and acid in it.
True that.
Well, with those sage closing words, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been, I mean, talk about all your great accomplishments. Us talking to you is like one of those moments. So we're so excited and thank you for being with us today.
All right. Thanks, ladies. Now you have to go and eclipse yourself.
Yes, there we go.
We need to double book ourselves in our accomplishments. Yes.
Yes.
Love that. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.